This audio is a recording of a Better Questions discussion in Chelmsbury in February 2010. The discussion was on two French left philosophers, Jacques Rancière and Alain Bordeaux. This part is the questions and answer session that followed the discussion. You'll find the two presentations about the philosophers at IndyMedia, article 95895, or at anarchism.pageabout.com. The discussion was organised by Better Questions, which is an initiative that has emerged out of conversations between people engaged in either social movement practices in Dublin and or thought on radical social change. They have a blog at thought-movements.blogspot.com.
Oh,
there are a few kind of really technical issues about Badu, but I don't know if anyone's really interested in going into them or not.
Yeah.
In his philosophy and his politics, the concept of the event to me is very, very mysterious. He presents a view of the universe where there's multiplicities and multiplicities, whatever, and then suddenly this event comes. The events are only allowed to be of four types. I think he says that's axiomatic in the system. It can be to do with science, art, political upheaval, and
love.
And I'm just wondering, without getting into the maths or the technicalities of it, you see, if you're looking for something like this to happen, and you want it to happen, and you want society to change, but it seems to arise suddenly and from nowhere, and if you're hooked into what you might call the conventional left, you're not going to see it. How do you kind of see these events, and how do you get behind what could be an event, or how do you get into it, or how do you get
so
behind?
You are asking me, if you can't see them, how do you see them? I can't answer the question.
It's a bad question.
I think like this is the political challenge today. Like, it's not to be closed in a kind of a cultural or an ideological framework. Ideology is really important. I mean, we have to study Marxism, we have to study historical materialism, but we have also to be open to the event. Like, we have to try to do what Marx did, to try to see in the manifesto, like, because at his time, the workers were not Marxists. When he was talking about a specter that was running around Europe, haunting capitalism, like, the specter was not himself. So what we have to do is try to see the new emerging and try to give a consistency to that. Now, I don't have an answer about how to do that, but for example, Paddy was talking about the banlieue, and just to interpret a youth riot as the result of an Arab identity, or the result of living in a deprived neighborhood, or the result of drinking or doing whatever, like, this is just a destructive thing. I think in that moment, for example, in 2005, there happened something that stopped a chain of representations. You know, even the state there, had to retreat a little bit. Like, it opened something, but no one could concretize anything there. And one thing that happened is that the 2005 riots demonstrated that the left in France didn't have any grasp on the situation. Like, they couldn't even take the situation to normal. They couldn't act as leaders on the street. And they could neither take the situation as a normal. So they were completely unused. So this, I say, when something happens, I don't know what, but for example that, like, just not find out excuses, or just not thinking about ideology, or trying to interpret the class composition or the ethnic composition of those young people, but to think in positive, like, how do the situation can develop? Yeah, this. I don't know if I answered your question.
I have kind of some issues about getting into those things of objectivity in terms of building rather than because the objectivity becomes very clear, and the objective becomes very clear at the moment of conflict. And, you know, that's a subjective experience, but it's pretty clear that there is an objective force out there that you're kind of fighting against. And I think, I don't know, maybe it's something in your own head, I think some of this is, it becomes necessarily vague because it's a useful way of framing and looking at things, but I'm not really sure that it reflects the subjective reality of people on the streets or in sit-ins or in the unions in a way. I think that there are perspectives that look at things, but I don't think you can absolutely reject the notion that there's objectivity or that people can collectively come to look at things and be able to paint a collective picture, which requires, you know, collective subjectivity becomes objectivity if you expand it out wider. So again, I wonder, that's, yeah.
Do you want to answer?
Well, I think often sometimes in these discussions about objectivity and subjectivity, the words can, I mean, as you said, if you've got a collective or a community that understands this problem, I mean, a good example is the San Battista. I mean, there was an after agreement that was going to be signed. They were all going to be physically moved. You know, you can't get more objective than that, in the sense it's got a physical effect. But I think the problem is that, or what I'm trying to, maybe I speak for Alessandro a little, is that it's rather that you can't understand politics as some kind of unfolding of objective conditions, or that there are objective political actors that can be identified before a moment of rupture or break, because you can you fall into a trap of preventing new subjectivities arising. I mean, the political is about new subjectivity, so you can't define that before the event. Do you see what I mean?
I think you can define some of the factors of breaking events. For example, it's very, very clear that objectively there are people hurting and seeing about what's going to happen. That's objective.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a big deal. I guess things have determined when you have what they're doing in that context.
Yeah, the problem is that that's objective, and that's the state, because the state is a hierarchical frame. You know what Badiou and Rancière say is that to fight against it or to moderate it, because the point is in the end is to limitate this power of the state, this unequal power of distribution of the state. You know, the fact is limited in that. I don't know what would mean to destroy the state. There are not no examples at the moment. So the point is that they say to do that, you can do it from inside the state, because if you do it from the inside the state, you are trapped in that figure, and you will lose. To fight against the state, you have to take a distance, and you have to feel even the state in yourself. Like, you have to take distance from those parts of yourself that are in a way state, and I think at the moment to belong to a union or a union demonstration is nothing more than a state procedure. Like, a union demonstration doesn't achieve anything, not even to change the salaries, not even to change salaries that maybe are already high. You know, it's just a state procedure. It's just kind of a fiction, the fiction that there is politics going on, but under this fiction there is nothing real, you know. It's just about distribution of wealth, and it's an unequal distribution of wealth. So I think if we have to look for subjectivity, we don't have to look to a union demonstration, that was your first example, and see where a subject could rise there, but just to let it on a side and to focus our attention to other things, to other phenomena.
And it's also the case that, you know, if there's an objectivity of that condition which you want to escape, if you try and isolate it as something that's objective, it can start reducing the potential for the subjectivity that's outside of the state to just particulars, an example we were talking about the other day, that, you know, you have these movements that arose in the 60s that were a bit nebulous and not entirely sure what they were they were. It was a disidentification with the particular system at the time of the 60s, and all these different groups that broke away and kind of cohered a little bit. And they fought, and 1968 happened. But now you've got, you know, gay rights, environmental rights, civic rights, but they've been reduced to essentially some kind of quantitative thing, so that the environmental protest is just having less planes fly, carbon tax, this kind of thing, because it's trying to reduce what was the ultimate effort of disidentification, of creating something different, to actually trying to identify yourself more and more and get yourself counted more and more. It reduces it from a quality to a quantity. Does that make sense? It's not that that's a bad thing.
Just bring in Andrew.
Yeah, and I'd like to actually challenge the way you were both talking about the left, because I think you kind of just, you're setting up something that has this single point of view to argue against, right? But the left, in fact, is much more complex. You know, it's a whole range of opinions, expressions, and lots of arguments internally. You big organisations, you small organisations, you've got things that aren't even organisations at all. So in terms of all the examples you used, you know, when you're talking about kind of the left is over here, and whatever set of people we're talking about are over here, and then there's kind of this intellectual criticism of the left that's here that can see stuff that the left doesn't. It doesn't have any echo to me. And I don't know enough about the French Panoramic situation to argue that, but I know a bit about the Zapatistas. And I mean, to me, I mean, the mystification of them as this kind of magical new movement that emerged isn't terribly accurate. I mean, what they really were was a coincidence of subjective and objective conditions. And the subjective end of things were, in fact, three separate left groupings. I mean, on one hand, you've kind of a Maoist, virus influenced group coming down from Mexico City, you know, Marcus, kind of all of those people know. On the other hand, you'd a very long-running liberation theology-type project that was training up individuals in the communities right across the whole territory, you know, giving them literacy skills, passing it on, getting people into kind of long-running political discussions. And then you also have the kind of massive wave of peasant organisation that went through Chiapas in the 15 or 20 years before, and that had been repressed, and that was part of the reason why people were looking for weapons, basically, in order to defend themselves.
And possibly even longer history than that, too.
Yeah, well, and going back further, but they're all, you know, this isn't something of the left being absent, or even of most common ways told as, like, you know, Marcus and the lads wander down and, you know, magically get transformed. It's rather the kind of interaction of those three forces with the people. But it's not, I mean, that's not the way we're talking about the left. And it's a problem I often have with, I guess, that's this sort of discussion, in that you get this outside, almost outside critique that doesn't actually say, well, actually, we're essentially part of what we're criticising here. And you kind of need a deeper around that.
Can I just say one thing like that? I make a clear distinction between the left and a new politics to come. And I think when an event happened, like happened in Paris, I don't want now to make every time that. But that, you know, I know that there are 1,000 different lefts. You know, I come from Italy and there are 1,000 different groups, there are 1,000 different anarchist groups or 1,000 different communist groups. I know that. I know that very well. But when I refer to the left, I refer to the historical left, to a left that is in a way related to historical materialism and even autonomous now that in the end, like, although they write 1,000 new books, like Negri write Multitudes and is the Multitude, like they go back to objective categories that are class categories, because Multitude is still class, you know, that still dream from the general intellect or from objective condition to develop politics and not from subjective conditions. So when I say the left, I'm talking about that left that has been defeated for the last 20 years, at least from the end of the 70s. I'm talking to that about that left that didn't get the election of the 70s, that couldn't rework out what happened at the end of the 60s. That was this disintegration of the concept of class, this disintegration of the concept of party, of the working class, for example. This left that still try to reintroduce those old concepts, or that were really good concepts but are completely unuseful now. So this is for me the left, and maybe is a more inclusive set than. So when I refer to the left, then I know there is a big complexity, but in 20 or 30 minutes you can take case by case, you know.
Is that sort of description of the left, though, not applying state to the left? It's like, okay, here's a situation, we've got lots of different types of radical people, of different beliefs, different mindsets, and we're going to categorize them into all these different bunches. And that's totally disempowering, disenfranchising. Yeah. That's actually creating the state of the situation in your description of the left. Is that helpful?
I think it's not helpful, but it is what happened, you know. It is like it's the state that when something happens makes the distinction, doesn't underlines the new of what happened, but makes the distinction between the anarchist. I don't know, there is a demonstration, and it's the state, are the news that divide, and in the front of the demonstration were the unions, then in the middle the autonomists or opposite, and then in the back were the anarchists. You know, this is a state's reading of the situation, you know. But it's because that demonstration probably when happened is more or less a state's procedure, and that's why the state can do that. Is that what I am arguing?
Are you looking for a new policy? Sorry.
Do you mind if I just bring your mind and then you can
come back to it? Yeah, I wanted to say such a objectivity. I think the point of the Zapatista rebellion and of any revolutionary action is that it actually rejects objectivity, because you can say that NAFTA was an objective fact, but the whole point of the Zapatista rebellion is not an objective fact. It doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
The state doesn't, and if you're trying to go against the state, you're saying the state doesn't have to be. A social fact is not like a physical fact, and they can be changed. And Marx said that the philosophers who describe the world at the point is to change it. So, in this identity thinking that sees social facts as being somehow real and unchangeable, it doesn't allow for revolution, doesn't allow for change, doesn't allow for subjectivity. So, what we have to do, what we need is to always see this kind of dialectical relationship, this dynamic tension, as being always present. The potential rupture is present in every situation, in every relationship, and in ourselves. So, John Holloway gave a really good speech. It was called "We Are the Crisis of Abstract Labour," because that potential to rebel, to say no, and the power of the no, because it allows a multitude of yeses. To say that another world is possible, this world that exists now is not an objective world. It doesn't have to be, because it exists only because we reproduce it, only because we recreate it all the time. And the potential for rupture, how it comes about, obviously none of us can change the world on our own. It's not a matter of just like, oh, if I think it'd be different, it'll be different. But the potential can erupt for a whole lot of people to suddenly realize this at the same time. And when I say realize, I mean to actually make it real through action. And I think that this is, that's a revolution happens. It still doesn't tell us how we can make it happen, or, you know, like how you can identify it when it's coming, because it does tend to come from new categories that maybe we're not aware of, we don't see before.
I absolutely agree with all that, and it's going back to this thing about the left, going back to the very beginning about Rancière and his split from Althusser, and his reason for splitting was because of this. And I might just quote it, because I did have it. Althusser, who wrote about this idea of a division of knowledge: the function of teaching is to transmit a determinate knowledge to subjects who do not possess this knowledge. The teaching situation thus rests on the absolute condition of an inequality between a knowledge and a non-knowledge. And I'm not for a minute saying that everyone on the left says that's true, but it's this idea, of an objectivity in which there is a truth and a false consciousness, that there is, as opposed to, and Rancière's labour against a lot of left thinking, and I'm not trying to, and I certainly don't have the knowledge to talk about all the separate divisions of and its complexities of the left, but it's the idea that rather than fixing on some kind of objectivity and just helping people out of their conditions, which they aren't quite aware of, into this other condition, rather than that, there is a multiplicity of different realities, not one type of reality, not one type of falsehood, and that those realities, many different worlds, like you were talking about, those many different, and that's where the subjectivity comes in. It's an assertion of a different subjectivity against what we might regard as objective material conditions at any one time.
Are the constraints or is behavioral constraints and representational constraints?
I think this is the originality of Badiou's theory of the state. He doesn't limit the state as like some old analysis do, simply state apparatuses, as Althusser was calling them, but in his ontological theory, like he calls the state of a situation that is more than a construction of apparatuses, and there are apparatuses like the police that support this representation. It's more an ideological thing. It's more a representation, as he said before. It's something that that we have in our mind that belongs to our behavior. I think this is the originality of the. Of the theory of Badiou. So it's I don't know if yours was a question or just
an observation. It is a question. Yeah, I'm wondering those same representations.
Yes.
The strict and self-censor would not also apply in other organizations.
For example,
being a member of a union, that I behave as is appropriate to a member of a union, and I circumscribe my own behavior as a result of that identity that I take on. And I'm wondering, is the union also an example of a political organization that brings about this self-censorship or this...
Yeah, but I don't know if this is... But a union here, in Badiou's perspective, is considered to be a state apparatus. A union is a state apparatus. It's a
perfect. So does that the thesis? As the counter-example.
Well, maybe they've been putting we're talking about them as this ideal type now, as opposed to it's maybe what is actually going on. Because if they are this mystical community that they've got it all right, and you're asking how do they not fall into the same traps of these self-censorship and denying their subjectivity and so on. It's never worked. Revolutions—the reason why they don't, they've just reinstituted state bureaucracies. They've reinstituted the way in which people are circumscribed. But the idea is of this obviously you can't talk about examples really. But it is the idea of things always being open, always having this potentiality, not being close.
I would like also to say that this is a really important point, that that opposite to the state, politics is not something constant. Like the state is like there is every time a state of the situation, but politics is not always. So we can like politics is just in short or long sequences. So there is a beginning that starts with something, with an event, I don't know, May 68, but then there is also an end. You know, we can't think about politics in Badiou's perspective, because I am just explaining the thought of Badiou. In Badiou's perspective, there is not a politics that is forever. There is not an institution created by a politics that it will be forever a subjective institution. Like It is really possible, for example, that a Zapatista organization will, with the time, depoliticize and become a sort of apparatus of the Mexican state, as the Union became in Europe, you know, because the Union, when the Union movement started, it was not like this. They were not state apparatuses, you know. They were organization of the workers that were not trying to represent, but they were born from the bottom, from the ground. Now they are just apparatuses through which the state managed to regulate dissent and labor practices. So.
Andrew, did you want to come back in?
Okay, I keep, every time somebody says something new, I go, oh, I'll answer that. But just to go back to the unions, because people keep throwing that in. I mean, I think if you actually look at the historical developments of most unions, they've always had two roles. And part, one of those roles has been what you're ascribing as, you know, part of the state apparatus. I mean, certainly if you look at things like the unions that came out of the skilled workers, the guilds, I mean, their original, they often rose out of organisations that were about regulating who could do the work and, you know, how it could be certified. General workers' unions were a bit different, but they've always had these two roles. I don't think that has changed radically today.
Okay, the unions is not, but maybe the communist part, I don't know, this was because...
But it's important in terms of what you're saying, because what you're saying about them today would change, would lead you to walk away and go, oh, there's no point fighting there. But I think
of course, because they are a representational organization, and like it's, the problem is with representation. When you fall in representation, then there is a link to the state. Like when you say, "I represent workers," "I represent the victim," like there is always a link to the state. Like this is
the other thing I wanted to do was people are talking about self-censorship, right? But what I'm kind of hearing is people saying any form of collectivity is a problem. Because the thing is, any time you have a group of people together who are struggling together, they're going to have to enter into certain relationships and self-censorship, right? Give you a really stupid, simple example of Showman's Free doing fundraisers, people who are working on this next drink, right? That's an example of saying, okay, I'm going to regulate my behaviour as part of this collective because I think we can do things better by doing it. So that's the universal thing.
Discipline is really important.
I
believe it is.
And the last thing I just wanted to bring up was the objectivity thing, because I think people are making the mistake of confusing objective circumstances with determinism and certainty. And yet throwing the baby out the water, I mean, I think if you look at Chappers, there were particular objective conditions that made it possible for a set of subjectivities to actually go somewhere. It was possible at that particular moment, maybe for a span around it. Not that at any moment of time, all it needs is some sort of magic subjective thing to happen and things can come from nowhere. I mean, specifically the NAFTA, the fact that the Mexican state was going through a period where it was really weak, the trade was in the process of collapse, so the ability to repress was limited because of that. And also the fact that you had a local set of conditions quite different from the rest of the country, where there was an internal opposition towards it, and where there'd been a level of repression that led people to be very open to the sort of arguments that were actually coming up. It wasn't simply, you know, three sets of groups with smart ideas, it was three sets groups talking to people at a particular moment when those arguments had an echo. And I think in terms of trying to achieve stuff, it's identifying those moments where there is a potential echo that's important. The whole package of counter arguments I'm doing is because I think very often what we end up doing is we identify this thing as the left and we throw the whole thing out and we don't understand that actually there's a developed historic experience that falls under that label that goes over hundreds of years, but there's many useful lessons in. There's also a whole lot of shit, a whole lot of stuff that does need to be thrown out. But, you know, I think we need to be careful about it and cut it up much more and look at things.
I'll just bring back your sound to
that. I'm not sure what I was going to say, because it's really interesting what you're saying about the pieces, but I wanted to pick up this point about the regulation of behaviour, self-regulation of behaviour. And this is necessary to, like, in social relations, it's always necessary to define or limit your behaviour in some way, which is always negotiated with people who are part of your social group, part of your kin relations, like in anthropology, you know, you find it in terms of kin relations or in terms of other different relations. And this is always necessary, but the point about, like, if we do this in a way that state, the way that the state demands, so that it can accommodate, so that it can define us. The point about the way that the state defines it is that it's profoundly anti-state. As Marx said in capitalism, you have social relations between things and commodity relations between people. And this is what the state demands of us. It wants to define us in ways like as individuals, as in we're only individuals in that we're separate from each other. We're not individuals with individuality. And the state isn't interested in our individuality, it's interested in categorizing us. And this is what they're doing, the census, for instance. And this is what sociology does a lot of the time. It just defines people as members of certain groups that means that they can be managed from above. But is not interested in our kin relations, in what we do socially, in what we believe, or what we can be potentially. It's not interested in our actual individuality. And the way that you manage yourself in social relations doesn't necessarily prohibit that. But the way that the state defines us, and if we agree to allow ourselves to be defined by the state, then we have the state within us. And this is what we have to resist and avoid. That's this kind of identity.
Yeah, it's very interesting what you're saying. And I think, but no less way about you, it runs here as fast as long. I think some of the emphasis on, the absolute emphasis on equality and on freedom, and on sort of rupturing common sense ideas of what should be given to people, there's no problem with that. The idea that authority should be delegated rather than represented is something I'm very sympathetic to. But there's something about the shape of this conversation, and some of it's Andrew's mentioned, which makes me a bit uncomfortable, and I think it's because, once again, we're translating terms borrowed from French intellectual and political history, and we're putting them in here. You know? But basically, a lot of what you're saying is about a long reflection about the appalling influence of the French Communist Party on French political life. And that's both those men, both as activists and writers, That's the point of reference. You know, in a sense, that doesn't necessarily translate to, you know, we don't have the same lived history through the Communist Party. That wasn't the unsurpassable horizon. And I don't understand that view very well, but I'm interested in hearing what you might have to say. I think in trying to sort of say renegotiate your own past in a communist movement, you might start overemphasizing the new. You might start fetishizing on you, and you might avoid all the things both within everyday life, even within capitalism, that sustain us. The things, the idea, like, and this is a historical idea as well as a present idea, the gains that we've won, the things that we do in everyday, that actually are sustained by emancipatory energy. But that emphasis on the new, on rupture, is useful, but it can hide that as well. Is that clear what I'm getting
at? Yes. I just think it's like I agree with what you say, and that the French situation, but we are presenting two French philosophers,
sure.
So that's the reference. And but I don't think that communism was in the 60s was not a problem in Ireland. Maybe it was not a direct problem, was not a subjective problem, like a problem of a communist party being so strong as was in France or in Italy, but Ireland, like the rest of the world, was inside of a kind of geopolitical configuration that was based in the opposition of communism against capitalism, and so we shouldn't forget that it's not a case that the troubles in Belfast started around the 68. There was a worldwide political sequence going on that at that same moment we had the Chinese Cultural Revolution that began in 66 or 67. We have the French May 68. We have the hot in Italy, and so I think, as you say, Ireland is a specific case, but we shouldn't Yeah, and then I agree with that, like, we shouldn't over-fetishize the new, and as I said, like, we have to study history of emancipation, but we have to learn from this history, like, we should even not over-emphasize the past movement, you know, because the past movement lost in the end, that's why we are here, so, yeah, this is my answer.
That's a quick end. There's one thing that came up there is a real old Marxist thing. This, well, first of all, subjective, objective. A lot of people wouldn't even concede that in some ways, that you start off with these subjects, and they've got this brain, there's an outside world and all that. Philosophically, whether that's a good starting point. Secondarily, though, the relation between the what's called the base and the superstructure, you know, the objective economic conditions and then the subjects contained within it. I don't think Marx ever meant it as a causal relationship. And it's been debated for years and years as to what exactly it meant. And actually, the best thing I ever heard on it was actually Walter Benjamin or Walter Benjamin, who had the most bizarre one of all, which is like, if you consider a man who ate a big meal, he said that's the base. And what comes out of that is actually the nightmares he has. And that's how he related them. But it's like, the one thing you can never do, I think, is have that narrow kind of causal thing. Here's X historical situation, now this is going to happen. It's mind-bogglingly complicated, and I don't think anyone's ever figured that out. All you can say is that there are sets of economic circumstances which may limit or, you know, give certain opportunities. I think that's, like, the most you can say on that subject. One concept that Badiou has that I think is very good is what he calls over-fidelity to the event, so that when an event has happened, that, you know, people get caught up in it, really caught up in it, and really, you know, move with it. And I think in some respects Badiou himself has got over fidelity to an event, and that's 1968, and I think he can't get out of that. I think in some ways he's a bit caught up with the past in this presentation he has. Even 1968 is an incredibly inspiring thing. I think I like his idea of over fidelity to the event, and I think it's something everyone should think about in politics, you know, and like just fanatically attached to a label or whatever.
Yeah, I think you are. He is over faithful to the event of May 68, but it's also because an era of communists ended with that in the end. Like, May 68 was the initiation of the fall of all the communist regimes around the world, including first of all the Soviet Union. I think it's because of that, and it's even because he participated to it, and after that we haven't had anything like that, like with such a strength. I think it's that.
Well, we finish up then. Does anybody want to make a final comment? I have two really quick announcements. The first one is that in 2 weeks' time, on Wednesday at 6:30 again, we'll have the final seminar in this series, which will be an all-star cast roundtable on the idea of praxis, looking at the ideas of Freire, Deleuze, Gramsci, and maybe some other people. So come along to that, please. And the other thing is, Dave, there, in your question, you were talking about trying to create, is it possible to create forms of collectivity which don't suffer from the state stuff these guys are talking about, and Chalmers Free, which we're in right now, is trying to do that, and would really appreciate some donations towards that project. So I'll be standing here at the door, and I have my black hat, and if people have a couple of coins to throw in on the way out, that'd be fantastic. Thanks very much.
Recording of a Better Questions discussion in Chalmers Free in February 2010. The discussion was on two French left philosophers, Jacques Rancière and Alain Bordeaux. This part is the questions and answer session that followed the discussion. You'll find the two presentations of the philosophers at IndyMedia, article 95895, or at anarchism.pagebode.com. The discussion was organised by Better Questions, which is an initiative that has emerged out of conversations between people engaged in either social movement practices in Dublin and or Thought on Radical Social Change. They have a blog at thought-movements.blogspot.com. The recording and editing was done by Andrew Flood. You'll find more articles and also more recordings I've done at anarchism.pageabode.com/user/AndrewNFlood.